of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KABU Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kabu.fm. The Development and Events Committee meets on the third Monday of the month at 5:30 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kabu.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Calling all denizens of Earth. Tune in to KABU on Saturday, April 22nd from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. for KABU's Earth Day Takeover. It's a whole day of radio programming devoted to climate action and environmental justice. Join us and prepare for nature sounds, music, and activist interviews focused on our shared climate future. That's KABU's Earth Day Takeover on Saturday, April 22nd from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. and online at kabu.fm/earthday.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.
Davey D, Hard Knock Radio, hanging out with you this afternoon. Yesterday, we started a conversation about what is taking place in Nashville, Tennessee. We promised that we would follow up. And this, of course, is concerning the plight of two African-American representatives who were serving in the Tennessee state legislature. They were expelled because they, quote unquote, participated in a protest that was demanding that that body take action around gun violence. The protest was led by school kids who feel unsafe and felt that not enough was being done. In something that harkens back to the days after Reconstruction, where Black folks who were holding office were run out of office, is what was conjured up when we saw the expulsion of Justin Pearson and Justin Jones, Representatives Justin Pearson and Justin Jones. Joining us from Nashville is Rodriguez White. I'm gonna let you affiliate yourself the way that you want to, Rodriguez, but you've been on the ground, there's been rallies, and there's a lot that's happened since we aired yesterday. You know, I think as we were closing out, there was a vote, and Justin Jones was reinstated and I think actually sworn in, but there's still a lot of drama going on. And so, you know, being in Nashville, I guess I want to start off, what's it like in that city? What's it like in Tennessee? I think in our conversation yesterday, we didn't really give the history of that state. This was the place where the Ku Klux Klan was founded. This was a place where statues and highways were named after Nathan Bedford, you know, the founder of the Klan. So, and these things weren't gotten rid of until probably people like yourselves were kicking up dust and demanding. So we're talking about if there's any removal and acknowledgement of how traumatic seeing the honoring of people like that. It was very recent. So, you know, I'm gonna give you the floor and thank you for joining us this afternoon.
No problem. Thank you so much for, you know, giving me this opportunity, Davey. Yeah, so the environment here right now is one of finally, if you will, we've been dealing with these issues from the state for quite some time. I also want to say the state of Tennessee hasn't always been this bad, right? It kind of has ebbs and flows, but over the past 10, 12 years, particularly since they redrew the maps in 2010 and just gerrymandered the state, we've been dealing with unregulated Republican rule, where they, you know, we have a supermajority in all three places, the House, the Senate, and the governor's seat. So whatever they want to do, they do, no questions asked. They don't even tally the votes anymore. They do voice calls. And whoever's counting the votes just does it based off what he hears. It's very undemocratic here. And with these particular representatives, there's always kind of been a target on them. Gloria Johnson, when she first got to the state house, they had her office in the closet, right?
Gloria Johnson, for people who don't know, there were three people. She was the white school teacher.
Right. So
if I'm correct, she survived. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. She survived by one vote. Right. When she first got to the state capitol, like literally her office was in a closet. Like they bullied her into a small office and she still stood there. And then when it comes to Justin Pearson from Memphis, at one point he wore a dashiki during Black History Month and they tried to, you know, give him some hell about that. And then Justin Jones has a history with the state capitol as an activist, whether it be through trying to expand healthcare throughout the state or dealing with the Nathan Bedford Forrest, who was one of the founders of the Klan, who had his bus still in the state capitol. At one point, Justin was actually banned from the state because the then Speaker of the House accused him of throwing tea on him. And yeah, turns out that wasn't true. So the fact that Justin became an elected official was already a big deal because this is a guy who was just banned from the Capitol, right? So they've always had it out for Justin Jones in many ways. But yeah, so I'll say once again, this is just a situation of we're finally glad some attention is being brought to what is happening. Yeah.
Let me ask you, Rodriguez, how are Black folks in particular able to survive and able to thrive and do what needs to be done in a place with a supermajority where folks act with impunity and a lot of hostility from the outside looking in? And I'm asking this question specifically because many times I've been in circles where people almost have romanticized you know, like you hear words like the system's bad, you know, it's going to be some hard times, but we can make it. And, you know, yeah, the hard times in making it are under conditions like this. And yeah, if I'm looking at, say, Jackson, Mississippi, for example, and what's going on there, they're pulling out no stops. You know, I mean, they're literally, you know, like, let's set up a separate court system. Let's have segregation. Let's have a police force that overwhelms any police force that you have. You know, it's something that harkens back to a time that we read in history books. And sadly, in Tennessee and in Mississippi and in a bunch of other places, those history books don't even, you know, they're not allowed to legally be shared in the classroom. So how are folks like yourself thriving?
I mean, it's the South, man. And we're here, Black folks, right? And this is where our ancestors were put into slavery. And many of us have stayed, right? It's something about this land that, for me, is worth fighting for. You look at where the majority of Black folks in this country live, strong majority of them live down here still, right? It's the only place where you still have in the country where you have multiple places, counties and cities. And, you know, you're talking about Mississippi, that's the blackest state in the union, 37%, right? you know what I mean? So it's just the history of struggle that we've been through that I think we are still able to hold on to it and keep marching us forward.
Is there a strategy to overcome the electoral dominance that you're dealing with, or is that a one and done deal and you have to do other things to survive? You know, people talk about mutual aid and community resources and maybe local, you know, power. I mean, how are people dealing?
I'm an organizer in the sense of I look at all the things we have to do, right? And so, yeah, I think part of it is electoral. But it's also that combination of like grassroots work, the mutual aid, and, you know, creating systems within our communities that we can apply within our communities. And then eventually the goal, once again, if we use electoral strategy, is if we create these systems in our community, then eventually if we put enough people in leadership, these systems can be the system, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think it's just a combination of doing both of that work. We often ignore one or the other, right? And then eventually one side takes over more when we really need the balance of both forms of fighting.
Let's talk about, you went to a couple of rallies yesterday. What were those rallies like? Did you anticipate the reinstallment of Justin Jones? And is there going to be a clapback, you know, from the Tennessee legislature with him being, you know, sworn back into office under the current rules that allowed for him to be reinstalled or reinstated?
The energy at the rallies was great. I have just came back home from Wisconsin, working on a Supreme Court race up there. And then the very next day flew back home. And yeah, once again, the energy is just, finally, the attention is being brought on us. How dare, one, that you persecute these young men when children have just died and that's what they were standing for, right? There was a part two of that question. I'm sorry, what was it?
Well, the question was, will there be a clapback? You know, yeah. You know, and did you all anticipate, you know, Justin Jones being reinstated? What's the plight of Justin Pearson? You know, what's happening right now, you know, in terms of the steps that are being taken to make sure they get their seats back?
Yeah, I will say there's some type of energy around retaliation, mostly because the state is just vengeful, right? We expected Justin to get his seat back, as you saw it happen unanimously. Because once again, Justin is someone who's been in this community, who's been organizing, and he's a respected organizer in our city. So if there was someone, if they would have found a way not to put him back in Metro Council, all hell would have broke off. I do anticipate some type of action because of this from the state, maybe not immediately because national attention is still on them. But they're smart enough to wait till all the cameras are gone to bring that action back. Because not only was this happening, but also last year, the city council voted against having the Republican National Convention here in Nashville, right? So that combined with this happening with Justin, they also tried to cut our city council in half as a result. Which is currently 40 people. They tried to cut it down to 20. We're the only place in the state that would have been affected, so they didn't have to name Nashville for it to happen. And both of those things just got held through injunction, right? So the court said they can't cut the city council. We just moved Justin back through. And they want control of this city. So maybe not immediately. I do expect something to happen. As far as in Memphis, I'm not from Memphis, so I can't say too much, but from what I've heard, Memphis looks like they should be pushing Justin Pearson through. There has been some type of intimidation from the state because Memphis wants to get some money to upgrade the FedEx Forum where the Memphis Grizzlies play, and there's threats that, hey, if you push Justin Pearson through, you probably won't receive that funding. They've also tried to do the same thing with Nashville, by taking over our airports and our sports authorities, etc. So, yeah, I expect some type of retaliation. Maybe not immediately while the national cameras are on us, but this is a very vengeful state.
Nashville, is it majority black city? Or what's the population and makeup of there? Because you said you had 40 city council people and, yeah. You know, how does that city rock and roll, so to speak?
Yeah, so the history of Nashville is an interesting one in that Nashville and the county are one together, right? Mm-hmm. So it's Nashville-Davidson County. Now, that happened because in the, I want to say, early 60s, Nashville was on this verge, was on the verge of actually being a majority black city, right? The inner city, Nashville proper, me growing up was always black, right? Okay. North Nashville, East Nashville, South Nashville, all that. West Nashville was considered the white part of town, right? That's where all the old money is at. Through gentrification, Nashville has definitely lost a lot of its blackness. The black folks are being pushed more to the county parts, which is, you know, like places like Antioch, Madison, or what, they're still Davidson County proper, but they're not Nashville proper. So in 2020, we actually lost the majority status, black folks in Nashville proper. So up until 2020, we were the majority of people in the city. You go out to the county, that's where the white folks were. Outside of Atlanta, we're the only other city with four HBCUs, right? So black folks have definitely always held a major part of Nashville, but through gentrification, we're losing the stronghold. And a lot of that comes from the state. We've tried to pass different laws to make housing affordable, and every time developers will go to the state, pay them off, and next thing you know, it's preempted, and Nashville, through the state constitution, can't do anything about what's happening. So,
wow. You know, the image of Nashville from people who don't live there is that that's the capital of country music, and we think of white folks because, you know, we see the award shows and, you know, we might see one or two. So you didn't realize there was a lot of black folks here. But I guess that's to your point, Ron, where you were saying that in the South, you have entire counties and cities and lots of places that isn't all concentrated. Like here, we're in Oakland and, you know, maybe in Antioch, you know, or Pittsburgh, but that's it. You know what I'm saying? Everything else ain't us. But in many places in the South, you have entire jurisdictions where it's all black. With that being said, within the body of the legislature, how did the other Democrats, how did other black folks react to the expulsion of the two Justins? Did they really step up and show support and solidarity? Did it, was it a case of go along to get along? Was there another strategy in play? And were you and others satisfied with that reaction?
I, once again, from the beginning, I was in Wisconsin working on the election, so I didn't get back home until Wednesday morning last week. But from what I saw on the ground, the immediate reaction to the action itself that led to the expulsion, inside the House, there were some of the older, more established representatives who, you know, definitely had a problem with it. But once we got to the level of expulsion, that's when everyone was like, hold on, slow down. This is more than what actually needs to happen, right? You could have took some other steps, ethics committee, hearing investigations, et cetera. They went straight towards expulsion. So once that happened, everybody pretty much just gathered around, was originally the Tennessee Three, to, you know, show support. I personally think the response has been okay, not necessarily as strong as I would like it, just because, I mean, straight, to be quite frank, we're dealing with a fascist government who does whatever they want, whenever they want, and the only time they stop is when someone manages to catch them, there's enough heat. But yeah, I think the biggest thing we're looking for right now is just to make sure that we keep the attention on Nashville, right? Or better yet, on the state of Tennessee, and just use this opportunity to get the resources that we need. So I think just across Democrats all together, not even just the state of Tennessee, we've definitely had a lot of support, and it's what we've been needing and been wanting.
I mentioned, Ron, that this harks back to a history, you know, that many people may not have been familiar with, you know, with the collapse of Reconstruction after, you know, slavery in the 1800s, black folks, you know, immediately after emancipation, ran for office, took over state houses all throughout the South because we were the majority. And once that dreaded deal between the North and South was made, and, you know, and Northern Union troops left, we saw, you know, you know, oftentimes a forced expulsion of people from these positions of power. That's what it harkened back to. The saving grace at that time would have been interference and the presence of the federal government, which, of course, we know really didn't come, because then you had Jim Crow and everything else in 100 years of deep oppression. But with that being said, you know, almost immediately Kamala Harris came down there. And, you know, what did that mean with her coming down there, meeting with folks? Was there any sort of plan of action that her and President Biden could put into effect to reverse things or make or lighten the load, so to speak?
In terms of the vice president arriving here, I just think that it shows how big of a story this truly was. Still is, right? But on such short notice, like, a lot of us had no idea until the day of that she was actually coming.
Oh, wow.
I think that's just important to show that the nation is watching, right? And that the eyes is on what is happening in Tennessee, and not just now, right? Because once federal eyes get on it, and start really seeing the way people in Tennessee move, I think we're going to, even if the story dies down a little bit, we're going to keep hearing some things about Tennessee on a national level.
Is the convention going to be coming there?
No.
Okay, so you're all way.
They wanted it to, but we said Nashville City Council said absolutely not. We also don't want the DNC here also. So it's not just a Republican thing. We just don't feel like dealing with the tourists, right? That comes with that. I'm sorry, Dave. That was the second part to that.
Well, the second part was, you know, did Kamala Harris convey to you and others, you know, that they have a plan of action, that there are executive orders, there are maneuvers that can be done on the federal level? And, you know, I'm going to probably reach out to Barbara Lee, because I'm not sure if it was Jones or Pearson was an intern, you know, in the office at one point. But if federal eyes are on here, then maybe there should be some moves that are being made.
Yeah. They had a conversation. Vice President Harris had a conversation with the Dems in the Tennessee legislature. I'm not sure what that conversation entailed, so I can't say too much about it. So I don't know. But I'm hoping that there would be some type of continuous look at what the Tennessee legislature is doing from a federal level.
Rodriguez White is our guest. As we wrapping up, what gets lost in the sauce is the fact that all this jumped off because of yet another mass shooting. Mm-hmm. It was ironic, as we were on the show yesterday, as we were talking, another mass shooting occurred, this one in your neighboring state. Almost lost in what has not been shown, you know, is that it was kids, you know, school kids affected and angry who went into the galleys, you know, of the state house and demanded things. So what has that been like, just dealing with gun laws and all that? Have black folks, you know, how have black folks moved with respect to that? And I'm asking because the mass shooting, from my understanding, took place in, you know, with white folks, you know, white school, and, you know, and from what I've heard, it's conservative leaning, yet, you know, black folks did step up and bring attention, you know, to a lot of the oppression and repression that's going on. So what has that dance been like, and have we forgotten the victims of this mass shooting?
That's tough. Yeah, I wouldn't say we haven't forgotten the victims of the mass shooting. Our opponents have allowed the victims to, you know, be forgotten by focusing on other things. This could have been a situation where we're talking about gun control and being serious about it, right? What the Justins and Gloria did was bring attention to the fact that, hey, y'all aren't doing anything about it. And as a result, rather than actually stepping up and do something, the first thing they do is move to... That's the biggest action that has happened as a result of those children dying, is these two black men being expelled, right? We haven't expanded background checks. We haven't put in waiting periods between guns. We haven't done any of that. And I'm a gun owner, right?
Right.
I'm a black leftist in the South. Like, yes, I'm definitely owning guns. But I also understand, like, there's a responsibility that should come with this. And, no, Tennessee has created the conditions for that shooting to happen. That's the other thing we're not talking about, right? A couple of years ago, they made it so you don't even need a license to open carry. You can just open carry. Go buy you a gun, put it on your hip, and walk around the street, right? And then the first bill we have this session, HB1, in a state where more rural hospitals have closed across the nation in the past 10 years than any other, in a place that's 48th for turnout, voter turnout, in a place that's in the lower 40s for, you know, education and healthcare. We're a healthcare where all the healthcare companies operate and have some of the worst healthcare in the country, right? Instead of focusing on any of that, the very first bill was an anti-drag show bill, right?
Right.
Like, we have created this hate in this country. And then from what the news says, you know, the shooter identified as trans or whatever, and let's say they did, you have created this hate and this ease of access to deal with hate in this state, and no one is talking about it. So hopefully, you know, we can, once we get past putting the justice back in office, and we still have some national attention, we can really focus on, one, the true measures that are needed for gun control in our state. Once again, no one's going to take all your guns, folks. This is the South.
Right.
There's more guns than a little bit, right? Like, that idea is insane. But there has to be something done when you can just walk into a gun shop, look at a gun, pick it, background check, and you're in and out the door in 10, 15 minutes. And then you just go do whatever you want. In the same state where you need more hours to be a cosmetologist than you need to be a trained police officer.
Right? Real talk.
Like, yeah. So hopefully everything has got lost. The children have got lost in this. The point of gun control has got lost in this. But it isn't from our side. It's from the people who don't want to do gun control. They have used this as the opportunity to shift the focus.
Ron, can I ask you a favor? If you can put on your Wisconsin hat, you know, the hat that you wore, because you said that you were part of working on a campaign for the justice. And that was a big victory, you know, one. A lot of attention was focused on that, but it has ramifications. Who is sitting in federal judgeships and Supreme Courts? And we're seeing that because, you know, there was a judge in Texas who decided that, you know, an abortion pill that's been used for the past 20 years can no longer be used, and came up with some, you know, what seems to be a very arbitrary and very biased and intentional rationale to further a particular political agenda. The Wisconsin race, the justice that was able to win that seat, how important was it? What was it like? And what do you anticipate the ramifications? I would imagine that where Tennessee is located with respect to Wisconsin, if there's any sort of federal judge ruling, that, you know, that's, you know, that's within the jurisdiction, you know, so that's a big deal, and we shouldn't overlook, you know, what that meant and how that victory was won.
Thank you. That was a major win. Last time Wisconsin had a Supreme Court. It was interesting that they even vote in their Supreme Court. But last time they did a Supreme Court election was 2020, and the Democrats lost by less than one vote per ward, less than 5,000 votes, right?
Wow.
And this is a state where the margin statewide are always like that. So this time around, we won by 11 points or 200,000 votes.
Wow, that's huge.
It's a major victory, right? And this ensures that Wisconsin Supreme Court will be liberal for the next 15 years. right? So when 2024, when Wisconsin comes into play during the election, the guy who Janet Protasiewicz was running against, Dan Kelly, is a former Supreme Court justice in Wisconsin, and he's also one of the people who is being paid by Trump to push the big lie and try to help overthrow. So by defeating him, we can ensure that next election, if somehow this criminal decides to run again and gets the nomination and the election is closed, Wisconsin will not be a factor in helping overthrow our democracy, which is incredibly important. It's a swing state. It's very purple. It's a gerrymandered swing state, but it's a swing state nonetheless. And the legal ramifications that it has coming throughout the South, or in Tennessee and throughout the South, it kind of gives that, it's a glimmer of hope, right? That was the biggest thing that I heard from all my people back here when I got here, was one, thank you for working on the election, and that election has given all of us hope, right? That next year and the next couple of years, while we've been looking at this idea of our democracy falling, right, that we can just fight and organize hard enough, we can make something happen. I mean, we went from literally losing by less than 5,000 to coming back a couple of years later and dominating by 11 points. And it's just come from good organizing, right? Getting out there, talking to people, talking to doors, but that also takes resources. Coming from Tennessee and then working for what is honestly the best state Democratic Party in Wisconsin, and seeing how a functioning, fully supported operation runs with plenty of resources versus you get back to the South and, quite frankly, the Democratic Party nationally and the left nationally, not just the Democrats, pretty much abandons the South, and we fight for what wins we get. So if there's anything that I've learned from Wisconsin, it's one, it has given us a hope, but also resources make a major difference.
When you say resources, what is that? How does that translate?
Whether that be money to pay organizers, whether that be volunteers who are able to help you knock on doors, or, you know, in some cases, celebrities who are able to come out and, you know, use their influence to get out more votes, right? We had a thing in Wisconsin where cast of the West Wing and Veep came and helped and did some fundraising, and Eric Holder, former Attorney General, came out, knocked some doors. You know, just that type of resource. It doesn't even have to be celebrity. It could be mutual aid or, right, you know, feedings and stuff like that. Just finding ways to make sure that our people's needs are met so that they can have the energy that is required to go out here and fight. Because right now, when people are dealing with, you know, inflation and gentrification and, you know, stagnant wages, and we're trying to get them to, you know, go vote or whatever, though, I don't have time to look up no candidates. I'm trying to pay these bills and keep my head above water. And we need to be able to make sure that our people's needs are met so that they can actually fully participate in this idea of democracy.
Well, we appreciate the work that you all did up there. And as you said, that will make a big difference. It's one safeguard in a sea that is, rapidly writhing to become very fascist. I'm surprised that there hasn't been resources and the upliftment of Tennessee, because that is home to the Highlander Center, you know, and people know the Highlander Center, at least our listeners do. There's a lot of, you know, progressive work, good work that has come out of that over the years. Yeah. It's been a highlight. And so, you know, how did we get this disconnect? Was the, you know, were people and the alumni and the politics of the Highlander Center something that kind of rubs established Democrats the wrong way? Because that should be something that they should have been building around. And if you got people like you who are organizing, that should be uplifted more and more.
Yeah. Highland Sin is amazing. I unfortunately, I don't know how I've managed to be organized all this time and still have not been, but I'm not sure, honestly. I don't really have an answer for you on that. I just think we as the more grassroots level, at this point, I've spent half my time doing grassroots work, half the time doing more electoral stuff. But I'm grassroots at heart, and I think we just have to do a better job overall of just being more engaged with electoral. And like, we all have this understanding that electoral politics will not save us, right? It is not the end all be all. You got to get people elected, and you still have to keep organizing, right? But we really have to do a better job of putting our people into these places so that we can get or use the systems that we want and implement them. We talk about going against the system all the time. What is the system, right? It's usually a group of elected people. And then if it's not, it's someone who somebody who was elected got to choose, right? And so we need to be able to, just build that grassroots effort to where we know who our leaders are, right? It's not just someone who just popped up and it's like, hey, I want to run for the community and I'm
Well,
black to vote
that's what
for it.
Highlander was about at the end of the day, really making sure that organizers had that connection with the community and that you were really building and molding, folks that were going to be responsive of the community within the community and that they weren't parachuting in and out, just pop up and, hey, I'm here, vote for me or anything like that. But it was really, focused around the grassroots work that you talk about. And so,
And that's where the two Justins come from, is, that's once again why community is so strong, because they aren't guys who just popped up
popped
and was like,
up.
hey, I want to run and we're going to do it. Like, no, Justin Jones has been out here since I was organizing about 10 years ago, right? I heard of Justin Jones. Justin Pearson, people in Memphis, his family has really deep roots in Memphis. Gloria Johnson is one of the teachers and from East Tennessee, and a lot of my organizing friends have loved her as a teacher out there for years. So these are people who have been ingrained, and when the politicians attacked them, you weren't attacking a representative, you were attacking our community and our people who fight for us, and that's what made that personal.
Give people who are listening in the Bay Area and folks who are hearing this in other parts of the country where we heard the marching orders, what would you ideally like our listeners to do? Where do you want them to tap in? How do they get a hold of you? So that we can, one, keep the spotlight on Tennessee. And when I say keep the spotlight, we don't want to make the mistake that we saw in the past, where it's like, oh, well, let me go show up in Tennessee because I need to help you all and show you how to organize. We already got organizers
No,
there,
we've
but how
been
can,
doing
yeah.
this.
Yeah, we don't want a Ferguson again. So
No.
how do we make sure, that we're able to assist and uplift the work that is on the ground being done with people like yourselves and others? What are the marching orders?
There's so many good orders I can name. I want to The top ones I want to name is Tennessee Holler is a great way to keep up with the news of what's happening in Tennessee. His name is Justin Canoe. He is a guy who's been following what the legislator is doing, and that is a great place to find out the news.
It's called Tennessee Holler.
The Tennessee Holler.
And it's run by Justin. Man, there's a lot of Justins
Canoe.
up there. Man, a lot of Justins doing
There's
stuff
a lot
there.
of Justins involved in this whole thing, right? And people have to keep reminding me which one to say, Jones or Pearson. I'm so used to Justin Jones, I just say Jones.
Do you have a middle name, Justin? You're not Ron Justin White, are you?
No, Justin over here, dog. But so Tennessee Holler, Equity Alliance, donating to them. There's other groups like Stand Up Nashville, Black Nashville Assembly, just folks who are really out here doing the day-to-day grassroots work that needs to be done. And I would say resources, send us some money, folks, right? Is one of the biggest things. Don't just drop in. Like you said, I've been in places too where I've seen it happen, right? People just drop in and try to teach folks how to organize and stuff. It's like, dog, we didn't know how to organize, we wouldn't be alive right now. Exactly. So, yeah, just continue and sharing on social media when you see some of the news coming out of Tennessee and making sure that you're just continuing to, you know, spread that awareness. Because I'm aware that in a week, like Justin Pearson gets probably gets put in on Thursday, hopefully. And then a week after that, the cameras are going to be gone. And then a week after that, Tennessee legislators are probably going to be back to the same BS, right? So I just ask that people just try to keep as much of an eye on Tennessee as possible and just spread the word.
Rodriguez White, we appreciate you coming on Hard Knock Radio, keeping us informed. We will keep our eyes and ears peeled. We'll tap in at least to Tennessee Holler, you know, and at least stay abreast of things. And we'll keep an eye and ear out for you. And thank you for the service, man. You know, big victory in Wisconsin. And thanks for the organizing you and others have done, you know, to stem back the tide in Tennessee.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate you, David.
We're going to take a break on Hard Knock Radio. We'll be right back.
Hard Knock Radio. East, West, North, South, conectados. Every set, every hood, barrio to barrio. Y'all stand up, stay righteous. Speaking to the thugs, one love. We know where y'all at. Round Buffalo. It's a hard knock life, gotta pay your bills. They want a song about bling, but it ain't real. We speak to the kids and the OGs. Organize, mobilize, be the change you wanna see. 415s bumping Hard Knock Radio. Brown Buffalo, all up in your stereo. And to the youth, live life like it's golden. Go dumb, go hard, but don't forget where you're going. We from the hood, so it's all to the good. Let us know this, what you're feeling is right. Let's get this understood. It's only one reason why we here today. We trying to make real music so the people can relate.
Learning from these hard knocks, slipping in these hard knocks, listening to hard knocks, questioning the poor guy. Learning through these hard knocks, living for this hip hop, listening to hard knocks, ripping to the hard stop. Learning from the hard knocks, living in these hard knocks, listening to hard knocks, questioning the poor guy. Learning through these hard knocks, living for this hip hop, listening to hard knocks, ripping to the hard stop.
If you knew me, you would know. You would know that I'm from Knoxville, Tennessee, Florida, Alabama, and other parts of the South. You would know that I see myself as Appalachian and as Southern. You would know that I am Seminole and African, and that I am Southern to the core. If you knew me, you would know that I'm from parents and family and ancestors that has had to fight from being a domestic worker to a factory worker to a farmer, hiding in the swamps from Tuskegee to Florida Memorial, to suing the state of Tennessee and the Tennessee Valley Authority to keep their jobs and their lives. If you knew me, you would know that every day me and mine deal with prisons, substandard education, the military-industrial complex, police, a lack of decent jobs, housing, or anything else for that matter. If you knew me, you would know that I am the Highlander Research and Education Center, and the Highlander in Research and Education Center is me. If you knew the Highlander Research and Education Center, you would know that we represent the South and Appalachia, especially the rural parts. If you knew the Highlander Research and Education Center, you know that we were 75 years strong and have a great party that NASA is planning right now. If you knew us, you knew that we were based on the concepts of popular education, democratic participation, participatory research, and honoring your culture. If you knew me, you would know that the people best served to fix our problems are the people who are dealing with the problems. You know that we don't need experts. We don't need policymakers. We don't need none of you. So go back and deal with yours. If you knew Highlander, you would know that we have been involved in the Southern labor movement, the civil rights movement, economic and environmental justice movements in Appalachia and the South, and that we are still in the fight for foreign policy and immigration reform, intergenerational organizing, because we know that youth don't do nothing by themselves. You are on the backs of the people who came before you, who came before you, who came before you, who came before you, and nothing you do is solitary. If you knew me, if you knew Highlander, you know that we represent 13 states, from West Virginia to Texas to Florida, all over. You know that Highlander is the South in Appalachia, and you know that it's it. If you knew the South and Appalachia, you know that every day we are struggling with mountaintop removal that the Sierra Club won't touch. You would know that we are dealing with death and health and food. Yes, climate change is important. Yes, all this lovely stuff is important, but if you can't eat, it don't matter. If you can't live, it don't matter. If you knew the South and Appalachia, you would know that we are owned by absentee landowners who prey on our people. You would know that we don't own nothing because people in Britain and the North bought it in 1855. If you knew where I come from, you would know that every day is a struggle. But love, we got. Family, we got. Community, we got. And we bring that and rep that hard. If you knew us, you would know that Katrina may be the first time folk understood what poverty meant, but that we know what that means. You would know that every day people are struggling, from Podair and East Austin, who is fighting gentrification, to Appalachian Media Institute, which are youth groups and adult RAN. You would know that that the Appalachian Media Institute is fighting to get coal mines out. You would know that these kids stopped a coal mine. You would know that a seventh grader videotaped and was able to bring it all across his region and stopped his entire water supply from being ruined. If you knew the South, you would know that 21st Century right now in Selma, Alabama's camp got tore up, but that people from all over the South are struggling to try to rebuild it. If you knew the South in Appalachia, you would know that yes, we got Confederate flags. Yes, we got some stuff, but I'm sorry, racism is worse in Beantown than I've ever seen it in my life. It's not confined to down South. If you knew us, you would also know that back when sharecropping was still going on strong, that they used to bring sharecroppers from Alabama and Georgia to work in the mines to be strike breakers. And that the people of Kentucky, the poor white Appalachians, and them black folk bonded together and stood on the picket lines and fought. You would know that in those areas where coal mines, there are no Confederate flags allowed because we are all black in the mines. You would know that throughout, we were together. You would know that the reason why we haven't moved is that in the 60s, there was going to be a poor people's march. And that's when Martin Luther King got killed. You would know that people from the Brown Berets and the Black Berets, you would know that folk from the American Indian Movement, you would know that people from the Civil Rights Movement all the way from California to Texas back up to Tennessee were together. You would know that was one of the first times, except for what was happening in California, that folk down South all came together. And that was too much. It was too much. And you would know that in order for us to win, in order for us to really build a movement, the nonprofit industrial complex must die. You would know that that is what is killing our people. You would know that movement has been translated into professional nonprofitism. And what does it mean to be a nonprofit professional? What does it mean that the people you work for can't eat, but yet you chilling out in this cushy Hilton hotel? What does it mean that who we are? I'm not saying that we don't need to do electoral politics. I'm saying that to be real and recognize what does it truly do. If you do not do organizing work, I am an organizer. Organize, organize, organize. If you don't organize, you have no power base. What does it mean for you to say, I want this law passed? If you don't have something that push it, people can just say, well, whatever. What does it mean that nobody talks about poverty? Not really. What does it mean that nobody talks about housing? Not really. What does it mean that nobody talks about the things that my folk need? Like, what does it mean that in order that people have to quit school and get a GED because the schools aren't worth nothing? What does it mean that you can't go to college because you have to go to work? And if you do, you won't be in none of these organizations because you are not what they want. What does it mean that, and I will shut up in about 15 seconds. What does it mean that I understand that privatized prisons are hitting all of Appalachia and the South, and that we are recreating the slave, overseer, and master mentality? And what are we going to do to fight that? There is nothing in this conference around environmental justice when our people are dying all over the country. I was in Detroit, there are water shutouts. Who was talking about the water shutoffs? Have we talked about water shutoffs? You talk about climate change, you ain't got no water. No one's talking about toxic waste dumping in brown and black neighborhoods. No one's talking about what's happening to my people, what's happening to our people. We ain't talking about beyond marriage. I'm done with the marriage amendment. I want us to get rid of heterosexism. It is an ism, darn it, not a phobia. When are we going to actually take on the issues? When are we going to deal with the power base and change this planet? Change it for real? Do it for real, not do it so somebody can smile and look at you happy. You don't want a handout, you want what's yours. Take back what's yours. Don't say, please give me some breadcrumbs. Because that means that if you keep begging and begging and begging for breadcrumbs, you have no dignity, you don't have pride, you don't have yourself. Without pride, dignity, family, community, you are nothing. All you are is an individual. You are a lone ranger. So people, I don't want no lone rangers in this room. I want folk that are gonna stand up and fight.
Black fold. Black look like a revolution. Look like a family reunion in the park. Black look like it's a different world. Sound like a crawfish ball in New Orleans. Black folk joke around like Martin and got paintings from JJ in the living room. It sounds strong. Look like sacrifice. It'd be flowers blooming in the summertime. Black sound like old song. Smell like good food. And it tastes like heart disease, but it feel like maize at Jazz Fest. Black sound like something that hurt, like a hard test. Black sound like skin, like something dark. It look like hair, yeah, black sound like rough hair and good hair. Look like history, sound spiritual. Black sound like years, like working, like night. Black sound like money, look like Walmart, like corner stores, like cash register singing. Black sound like 400 years. Smell like Oprah. Impactful like Martin. Look like Cicely Tyson. Sing like Nina. Got a ass like Serena. Feel like broken homes in Section 8. Black smell like crack and collard greens. Sounds motivational. Feels like church. Look like big Sunday hats and ribbons.
Smile like your mom. Beautiful child, oh, you're the one. Fly like your daddy, make me so happy. Beautiful child, oh, you're the one.
Sound like Thick Plat swinging and Sneaky Uncles. Look like Tyler Perry making money. Sound like hating, feel frustrated, don't it? Like they don't get it. Like they won't ever get it, huh? Like, push your personal feelings of racial injustice so far underneath the carpet that you trip over your own family history. But I love me some black folk. I love the hair grease and the rental fees. The front row seats, the police, the projects, the mustard greens, being late, social security checks, government assistance, bougie black looking good, bags of hair, fake press on nails, rat tail comb, stunting gold chain, gold teeth, black men and big feet. I love me some black folk. For they are the people that were made from the darkest parts of the sky.
Smile like your mama, eyes like the sun. Beautiful child, oh, you're the one. Fly like your daddy, make me so happy. Beautiful child.
Talk, don't stop. EMN at it again. Sandman, Daddy Man, Chris Juwan Kim. Yeah. Innovation, stimulating ill conversation. Anything else is just imitation. Simulation, step into the zone. The Bay Area zone. Hard Knock Radio, let's go. Big shout out to Nita and Davey D. Yeah, right, feel me. Yeah. Honing down at Hard Knock Radio. Kind of crazy though. Oakland, stand up.
Yeah.
Ensemble, Big Nine Wolves.
Yeah. Kansas City.
Yeah.
Bellevue. Come on, check out.
Why every novice think they hard knock when they ain't gone all in and ain't paid the cost of the fee? Ain't nothing made, they bees trying to eat.
Talk Radio.
You are now rocking with the best in the West.
Yes, Coast. Monday through Friday.
Sing it, Chris.
Yes, Coast.
You are listening to KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland.
Welcome to World Ocean Radio. I'm Peter Neal, director of the World Ocean Observatory. The most promising alternative energy technologies of today are solar, wind, hydraulic, and ocean dynamic energy, and there are burgeoning examples of these already in development to include floating solar arrays, wind farms, interconnected dam systems, and wave and tidal projects that have generated early investment in production outcomes that clearly demonstrate that they can supplant fossil fuel productions at equal or more economical cost with value added as an old destructive energy apparatus is replaced with a new. But it is already clear that success in these areas can only be enhanced by additional innovation in new fuel research, battery storage, grid enhancement, and the redirection of financial incentives and subsidies to bring the new ideas to fruition at scale. There are an amazing number of startups and proposals, all seeking venture funding, some having found first-round capital and presently engaged in bringing their specific innovations to market. But external forces, reflective of the omnipresent subversion called greed, remain, as we see today, in the banking system and irresponsible corporate behavior. Battery technology is moving at the speed of imagination, and it seems likely that new and far more efficient and less destructive batteries will be close behind the now conventional, heavy and expensive lithium and cobalt-dependent models, the expansion of which is stalled in controversy over negative land and deep ocean mining conditions and outcomes. There are exciting possibilities. For example, an iron-air battery that mixes iron oxide and water in a closed container that releases the oxygen and hydrogen to react and make electricity in a recurring cycle, or a battery based on molten sodium and salt, or a battery based on a new material developed for electrodes that enable a solid-state battery, notorious for degradation or failure, to maintain and renew charge indefinitely, or the creation of lignodes, anodes derived from lignin, a chemical compound that gives strength to wood that, recycled or grown from sustainable forest practices, may substantially reduce the acquisition, manufacture, and environmental cost associated with alternative anode material production. Almost every day, a new idea for better battery development is forthcoming. All good. I continue to ask about geothermal energy production in the ocean and on land. The effect of that technology has been successfully demonstrated by the now ubiquitous heat pump, energy derived from the temperature differential in the air or ground that has become the go-to system for economical small-scale home heating, still expensive to install even with subsidies available, and still not yet at scale enough to make much of a dent in our continuing demand for fossil fuels. Batteries are useless without a viable energy source, and I am compelled to return to geothermal as an energy generation technology comparable to other alternatives. Some successful projects exist in Nova Scotia and Indonesia. There is the notorious example of Iceland, where 66% of the homes are already heated by 5 power plants using geothermal energy. The ocean, of course, is the greatest heat pump of them all, regardless of warming, still offering a temperature differential to drive the system to create energy for general use, not to mention for desalination plants located adjacent to coastal installations. Think of all those oil well shafts and platforms on sea and land. Might they not be redrilled, retrofitted, and adapted to this new technology, capturing energy from the temperature differential from core to surface and through the water column? Rather than leaving these to dereliction, including the communities on which the industry had previously relied, is it possible to reuse those structures and refit and renew their utility in a less polluting, more effective, and socially rewarding use than abandoned? There are coastal power plants dependent on fossil fuel delivery by ship that are an existing infrastructure for transformation. How ironic would that be to take the old technology and transform it in place, at scale, with a new, to take the old paradigm and reform it with a new, to solve an old problem with a new solution, to provide technology innovation with a new realization of rescue, R for renewal, E for environment, S for society, C for collaboration, U for understanding, and E for engagement. We will discuss these issues and more in future editions of World Ocean Radio.
World Ocean Radio is distributed by the Public Radio Exchange and the Pacifica Network in collaboration with WERU-FM, Blue Hill, Maine. Find us wherever you listen to podcasts and at worldoceanobservatory.org, where World Ocean Radio episodes are now searchable by theme. Find the Rescue series by clicking on the Solutions banner.
KBOO Portland. KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Finance Committee meets on the third Thursday of the month at 5:30 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found at our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.